Silverpearl Bhavaki.
Yeah.
Shri Bhakti Vai Bhavaki.
Yeah.
Grantara Srimad Bhagavatamaki.
Yeah.
Jai Giriraj Maharajiki.
Yeah.
Jai Nitai Gopremanandi.
Yeah.
Okay, so what have we discussed? Okay, so we see that Maharaj Chitraketu, he was traveling around the universe as a Vijayadhara, or at least as the head of the Vijayadharas, and he came upon Shivata and Parvati in Sumeru Mountain, and then what took place? It'll be too distracting. I won't go into this. He saw Shiva and Parvati at Sumeru Mountain, and then seeing them at Sumeru Mountain with Parvati sitting on the lap of Shiva while he's giving class, then he openly criticized of that. But Shiva did not take any offense, and all the saintly persons in the assembly also did not take any offense. But tonight we'll go from verses 10 through 17, and we'll see that Parvati did take offense. And she curses Chitraketu to become a demoniac personality. So we'll go from verses 10 to 17. If anyone has any points, you can bring them up as you go. Not knowing the prowess of Lord Shiva and Parvati, Chitraketu strongly criticized them. His statements were not at all pleasing, and therefore the goddess Parvati, being very angry, spoke as follows to Chitraketu, who thought himself better than Lord Shiva in controlling the senses.
Although Chitraketu never meant to insult Lord Shiva, he should not have criticized the Lord, even though the Lord was transgressing social customs. It is said, one who is very powerful should be understood to be faultless. For example, one should not find fault with the sun, although it evaporates urine from the street. The most powerful cannot be criticized by an ordinary man or even by a great personality. Chitraketu should have known that Lord Shiva, although sitting in that way, was not to be criticized. The difficulty was that Chitraketu, having become a great devotee of Lord Vishnu, Sankarsana, was somewhat proud at having achieved Lord Sankarsana's favor, and therefore thought that he could now criticize anyone, even Lord Shiva. This kind of pride in a devotee is never tolerated. A Vaishnava should always remain very humble and meek and offer respects to others. Sunadapi Sunichena, Sarvarapi Savishnuna, Amane Namanatina, Kirtaniya Sadahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. A Vaishnava should not try to minimize anyone else's position. It is better to remain humble and meek and chant Hare Krishna mantra. The word Nirjitatma Bin Manine indicates that Chitraketu thought himself a better controller of the senses than Lord Shiva, although actually he was not. Because of all these considerations, Mother Parvati was somewhat angry at Chitraketu.
So what are the points?
There's a line there that says the Vaishnava should not try to minimize anyone else's position.
One of the big anasthas in spiritual advancement is pride. The pride comes and then we fall down. Pride is, Krishna does not like people who are not proud, and some of Krishna shatters their pride. So pride is one of the biggest obstacles in advancing in spiritual consciousness.
Any other points?
We see in the first canto or the second canto, Brahma running behind the own daughter Vak.
Second canto.
And at that time, you know, all the sons and all the great sages and all are a bit typical of Brahma's behavior, but there in the purport, Prabhupada writes that you should not consider Brahma, even though he did such an abominable act of running behind his own daughter, but we should not judge Brahma on the platform of a condition because he's still a great devotee and we should not judge a person by the external activity that he has done.
Anything else?
So we could have given in advance from this lecture on this three-hour lecture. In that lecture, Maharaj said this is the most important lesson was every Vaishnava should teach. Maharaj said, I mean, here, Chitraketu, he became a little proud because of association with the Lord, and he thought he is above. The first lesson what Maharaj told is, a person who is proud, he cannot learn from anyone because he is already proud. He will never give an opportunity to someone else to find his mistakes. And he will never grow up in life. He is wherever he is there. He can never grow. The second lesson what Maharaj said is, because Chitraketu was little proud, but he has criticized Lord Shiva. But here if you see in this pastime, what I could not understand is, Chitraketu was not at all criticized. Generally, if a person who is not advanced, right, if he looks at such a situation, what is happening, is Lord Shiva sitting on the back, who is not, you know, who, I mean, I don't know what kind of devotee, who is not an Uttamadhikari, he cannot have that vision, you know. I know he knows Lord Shiva's position, but he was actually correcting Lord Shiva because for the other's benefit, you know, someone else sees that, right, they might imitate him. That's what we understood from yesterday's lesson. But, I mean, I have two questions here. Is this Chitraketu really criticized because he wants to benefit for others? He said that. The other point is, how can we avoid this pride, you know? Sometimes it comes and stays in our heart. Maybe if we do some good service, if someone says, you know, someone bats, we do a good service, immediately, automatically, we are there.
Okay, we'll answer those questions. Good questions. So, any other points?
senior person, but how do we, you know, we cannot go and advise them because there are so many seniors. Sometimes it happens like, I know because of our own faulty tendency, we try to find fault in others. But generally, if we find a fault, right, at least, you know, not advising others, how do we, you know, keep our mind, you know, in a stable condition, not to be disturbed, you know, looking at that. Apparently, it might appear as a fault, which is not.
Yes, good. Very good questions. You can join, but you have to come on time. We start at 7:30. So please never come late again in your life. All of my students always come on time. Yes. Yes. Rascal. Okay. So it appears contradictory, this chapter, because Prabhupada does this a number of times in the Bhagavad Gita so far. He'll say one thing or emphasize one point, and then halfway through the chapter it seems like he changes tact, and he begins to emphasize a different point. So up until now he's basically said the Chitrakesa was not proud and there was no fault. And now Prabhupada is emphasizing that there is a fault and pride has come. So previously he said one thing, now he's saying another. So I can't say why Prabhupada is writing like that, or why the Acharyas are writing like that, or why this is being emphasized. But basically we take the lesson, which is to be there. Because Prabhupada is making a point, he is teaching us a lesson, and the Acharyas are teaching us a lesson, and the Bhagavatam is teaching us a lesson. So sometimes it may be that it seems contradictory, but factually we don't have to worry about the contradiction, we just have to worry about the lesson which is being emphasized. So both lessons are equally important. One, we saw Shuchaketa's exalted position. Secondly, we're seeing that a devotee should not become proud. So both things have merit. We don't have to become confused. But it does seem contradictory that Prabhupada emphasizes one thing and then he goes to a different, in a different direction later in the chapter. So, of all the qualities of the Vaishnava, which is the most important? Humility. Right? Humility is said to be the crest jewel. Like that. You could also say compassion, actually. Like that. Kripa lua krita droha, such a sarasama. When Mahaprabhu mentions the 26 qualities of the devotee in Sanatana Shiksha and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says kripa lu first. Kripa lu, which means compassionate. So kripa lu is extremely important, to be compassionate to the fallen conditioned souls. A devotee is known as para?
Dukkha duki,
which means it's like a preeminent quality of the devotee to give mercy to the conditioned souls. Although humility is said to be the crest jewel of all the qualities, a devotee must be humble. If a devotee is not humble, then he cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. And actually, Sanatana Goswami makes this point in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He says that humility and prema are synonymous. In other words, you can't have one without the other. You can't have love of Godhead without perfect humility, right? Because love of Godhead means a perfect service attitude towards Krishna. Both things will be there and must be there in a devotee. A devotee who is perfect. So you see in Prabhupada's example, right? Prabhupada had a perfect service attitude towards Krishna. What is that? It's called prema, love for Krishna. Love for Krishna means it is a perfect service attitude. But simultaneously, Prabhupada was perfectly exemplifying humility. So both things are there. Whenever you see someone has prema or love for Krishna, they also have perfect humility. Like that. So both qualities must be there in a devotee. So, a devotee, he must develop this humility. It is the crest jewel of all the qualities of the Vaishnava. But we find, on a practical level, that a lot of the time we're not very humble. And in English, there is a saying which says that pride often borrows the cloak of humility. So you can put on that like a cloak of humility. Externally you can act humbly, but actually internally you're very proud, right? And devotees become very expert at going around like, you know, being so humble, but internally there's a lot of pride there, But externally, it's a very, you know, we play the role very well. Oh, you know, like that. So humble. But internally, so much pride is there. So much fault finding is there. We criticize in the mind so much other devotees. We're always putting ourselves above others. But externally, we may do it one another way. So humility, the real humility is the crest jewel of the Vaishnavas. It is the actual quality of the Vaishnava. Real humility. Pure humility. Actual humility. Humility will be tested. Even when you think you're humble, Krishna will test you and expose you to show you, are you actually humble? Like that. And sometimes we think, oh yes, I'm learning, I'm becoming humble. I'm not very good at it, but I know in the scriptures I should do it, and I'm trying, and now I think I'm becoming good at it, or achieving it. But then Krishna exposes us. He shows us, actually, you're not so humble. Someone just gives us a little insult, and we become so, our false ego becomes so damaged. So, that's why Mahaprabhu is saying Kripalu. Kripalu is also the most, or an extremely important quality of a devotee. Because even if we're not so perfect in humility, not that we're trying not to be humble, but even if we're not so good at it, at least we can preach. And in that way, we can attract the Lord's mercy. Because a humble devotee will attract the Lord's mercy. Also, a preacher will attract the Lord's mercy. And gradually, Krishna will arrange for us to become humble. He will make arrangements so your humility will increase. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, Kripalu, first, be compassionate, preach. And then, humility will come by Krishna's arrangement. Unless you are naturally humble. Okay. So, in this purport, Prabhupada is emphasizing we should be very careful about criticizing those who are more qualified than us. More senior devotees, more advanced devotees, we should be very careful about criticizing them or disobeying them. I have personal experience. I've been given instructions by senior devotees, and sometimes in my mind I've thought they are more senior, they are more advanced, they are more Krishna conscious, they are more elevated, but I am more intelligent. So they give me the instruction, but I don't follow the instruction. And then Krishna, he gives you very special mercy. Under those circumstances, then he really gives you some special mercy to teach you. So, we have to develop that attitude that we will be obedient to senior Vaishnavas and we will follow their instructions. Particularly, if you are voicing that you accept someone's authority, then you should follow their instructions. Sometimes devotees come and they say, oh, you're my authority, you're my shikshi guru, you are my like that. They say these things, but then they don't follow the instructions. So then what is the point of the relationship? And even my spiritual master, who was a diksha guru, and I remember him saying on many occasions, he said, so many times you give instructions and you know the devotees aren't even going to follow the instructions. Or they won't follow the instructions, or you can't give them the instructions that they actually need to hear. So the point is, in spiritual life, in order to advance, you have to follow the instructions of the senior Vaishnavas. You have to be obedient to the senior Vaishnavas. And you have to learn not to criticize the senior Vaishnavas. It is detrimental to devotional service. To become critical or puffed up or thinking that we can criticize them or find fault in them. And not that there are not faults there, everyone has faults. Even very elevated people have faults. But we should not emphasize those things. We should not criticize those things. We should not develop that kind of mentality. You'll see in Harisori Prabhu's diary that he served Prabhupada for 18 months, late 75 to early 77. And the reason he left Prabhupada's service in early 77, he went to Prabhupada and he said he actually felt that he was becoming a little critical in his mind towards Prabhupada. Even though Prabhupada was a pure devotee, but familiarity breeds contempt. So then he went to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, I feel like I'm becoming a little critical. Maybe it's better that I stop being in your personal association and service for some time. Prabhupada said yes. Because Prabhupada understood, yes, there was some mentality which is arising like that. So you have to be very careful of this point. Because the tendency of the conditioned soul is that we find criticism, we find faults in others, even those who are much more qualified than us. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us to be very careful at that point. Learn the proper etiquettes, learn the proper attitudes, like that. And what is the way to overcome this defect of sadhu ninda, of criticizing other devotees? What does Prabhupada explain in the Nectar of Instruction? Yeah, instead of criticizing them, then glorify them. Do the opposite. Look for the good qualities in the devotees. Glorify the devotees. Right? And actually, Burujan Prabhu, he told me that some Kartiks, he takes the vow that I will not criticize any Vaishnavas. Mm-hmm. So that's a very powerful vow. If you're going, and it's actually not so easy. Right? You try that vow. Try that discipline one time. That you won't criticize any devotees. It's not so easy, actually. Because we do it all the time, just in jest. And even though we don't, you know, it's not out of malice. You know, we're not doing it because we're envious or because we want to hurt the person. But still, we do it just out of jest all the time. We always joke about each other, you know, when we're not around. You know, when this one's not around. You know, if we're in a group and one of us is not there, because we're all friends, then, you know, we make jokes about that person. You know, we all do it all the time, like that. So then, try to take a vow for 1 month. Just like Kartik Mass or Purushottam Mass, which we're in now, then you take a vow. Or even for 1 week, you do it. Or even for 1 day, you do it. I won't make any criticism of any devotee. I'll only glorify devotees. It's very healthy for the consciousness. To purify your consciousness. Because actually we do it all the time. And you'll see that your mind does it all the time.
Actually, in this one, Purushottam and Karanam, because of sense and whole list of things that we should do, that one of them is we should not blaspheme the devotees. Not always, but especially in this one.
Any points? Verse number 11. The goddess Parvati said, "Alas, has this upstart now received a post from which to punish shameless persons like us? Has he been appointed ruler, carrier of the rod of punishment? Is he now the only master of everything? Alas, Lord Brahma, who has taken his birth from the lotus flower, does not know the principles of religion, nor do the great saints like Bhrigu and Narada, nor the four Kumaras, headed by Sanat Kumar. Manu and Kapila have also forgotten the religious principles. I suppose it to be because of this that they have not tried to stop Lord Shiva from behaving improperly." She's being sarcastic in this verse. She's saying, well, you know, why are you criticizing? They're not criticizing. No, they didn't say anything, so then why are you suddenly coming and saying it? None of them found any fault in Shiva. Brahma never said anything. And none of these great persons, so why do you do it? This Chitraketu is the lowest of Kshatriyas, for he has impudently overridden Brahma and the other demigods by insulting Lord Shiva, upon whose lotus feet they always meditate. Lord Shiva is personified religion and the spiritual master of the entire world, and therefore Chitraketu must be punished. Raj?
All the members of the assembly were exalted brahmanas and self-reliant souls, but they did not say anything about the conduct of Lord Shiva, who was embracing the goddess of Parvati on his lap. Chitraketu nonetheless criticized Lord Shiva, and therefore the opinion of Parvati was that he should be punished.
Any points?
to just for this past time to you know this manifest that Chitta Gita is punished. Is only the consequence of
that he's given the class with the wife on the left. He can do it any time because Parvati is the personified material energy. She's the eternal consort. So the sages are sitting there with Lord Shiva and Parvati. I mean, for them there is no distraction. Because they have transcendental vision, they don't see any distraction. So they don't find any difficulty.
It's difficult to understand what he is that the person of this nature, who is a mother, is given the power of the class. And he's sitting with his wife on the left. And it's not like, you know, the same sense as the Lord Shiva, just sitting in the river bank, wherever he's taking some river, that's fine. But the context is that he's giving the power of the class and he's having the wife on the left and he's addressing is why is he behaving like this?
Because Parvati and Shiva are eternal consorts. There's no sex desire. There's nothing mundane in the relationship. So there's nothing unnatural about it. And the only people in this Bhagavatam class are Paramahamsas. So no one has a problem with it. It's Lord Shiva's eternal consort. She's with him, and he's, like we said, that in Vaikuntha, then the husband and wives are embracing while they're flying on their Pushpi Vimana and glorifying Lord Narayan. But there's no sex desire. So Lord Narayan does not see any defect. They do not see any defect. So Lord Shiva and Parvati are there. There's no defect. And there's no defect amongst the assembly because everyone's on such an exalted level of consciousness, they don't see any. No one feels any material, any effect by the material energy. No one's affected by the modes of nature, so no one feels any discrepancy arising in their consciousness.
Because the consciousness is very clear, can they do it?
Means.
Just bring it to me. What is wrong? Okay, there's a one car, it's what's the number called?
Registration.
Number plate.
Number plate.
OGB704. Anyone has that car? Okay. The light is on inside your car. Please take this note. It is for you. Out there. So you don't get a flat battery. Bodily consciousness, then you don't have any consideration of these things. Okay, any other points?
So I think in this context, the best example is, one, I think there is a story in where the gopis would go and, you know, they want to give prasadam that time to Durvasambhu. That time the river would be flowing, Yamuna river. So they come back to and they'll ask Krishna, you know, how we can cross it. Please help us. Then Krishna will say, you know, you should think of me as a Brahmin and you should worship. You Brahmin they love, but he will say, go and pray like that, you know, then you know the river will give way. I don't exactly remember the context. But they'll go and again, you know, they give the prasadam to Durvasambhu. He will read the entire prasadam. And you know, again when they want to cross the river, they cannot cross. Then they'll ask Durvasambhu, you know. Then you know he will say, you worship to Yamuna that there is a Brahmana here who not Brahmana, there is a sage. He is, you know, fasting. Nirjal. So they'll come back to Krishna and they will ask the answer. Krishna will say, even though I'm with so many beautiful women, my mind is never attached. We taste the pleasure through the mind. My mind never, you know, is attached to this pleasure. He says he is renounced. And in Durvasa Muni's case, Durvasa Muni, because these gopis went and they gave prasadam, he ate. If they don't give, he will not eat. And number two is, while taking prasadam, he is not relishing the taste with the mind. He is just taking. Because they brought, he has to take, he is taking. That's it. In his case, he don't have that. Can you understand this context with that one, bro?
Yeah, same thing. Because Krishna is beyond the effect of the modes of nature. Krishna is a perfect brahmachari, but Krishna has the most friends. Does he look like a brahmachari? Huh? But he's the best brahmachari. He's the best brahmachari, but at the same time he's not a brahmachari. Because he's transcendental. So he's beyond any material designation. That's the point. So then in this purport, when Prabhupada is emphasizing that one must give up pride. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the hardest of all of the anarthas to give up is? Pratishtha. Pratishtha means? Desire for recognition. That is the hardest of all anarthas to give up in the heart. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that it looks very similar to the bhakti lata, to the creeper of devotion. Pratishtha looks very similar. And sometimes they grow next to each other, and they look very similar. And you think, actually, you're becoming very advanced, but simultaneously you're very proud of your advancement, like that. So it's very difficult to overcome this. And even when you practice devotional service for a long period of time, it still comes again and again and again. Pride in one's achievements in devotional service. So pratishtha is very difficult to give up. In Krishna's pastimes, each of the demons, they represent a particular anarta. So which demon represents pride?
Kali
is envy towards the devotees. So Keshi, he represents pride, like that. So each of these anattas must be destroyed. But this anatta is very powerful. It's very difficult to give up. Pratishtha means desire for recognition amongst the devotee community, like that. Very hard to give it up, especially when you get some of it. You get some recognition, it's very, very, you become attached to it. And it's very difficult to give up. And then you desire honor, fame, recognition. Like Lord Chaitanya says, that devotion, to achieve real devotion, then you have to give up dan, janam, sundarim, kavidam. Like that. You have to give up these things. Profit, distinction and adoration. But in devotional service, you'll see, even after many years, when you think you've overcome these things to a great degree, they're still very much there. You still very much desire profit, distinction, and adoration, especially when you begin to get these things. So you think, I am giving them up, but then you realize when you get them, And then when they're taken away from you, then you realize, actually, I'm very attached to these things. And then they come back again. And then you think, okay, now this time I won't be attached. And then they get taken away again, you realize, no, I'm still attached to it. So it's very difficult to give these things up. It takes a great deal of purification of Krishna consciousness. It takes a great deal of Krishna's mercy to give up all of these things. Any points?
The point you made is quite interesting, because in the devotional life, you know, so that you mentioned before that, you know, sometimes we have the relationship of practicing and we do the service, and then when someone appreciates or glorifies, then it even comes up. So it's a very hard point to understand that even though we do bit of with that of that little bit of the feeling, always devotees, instead of pointing out the mistake, you know, still they glorify. So what happens is this, there's always a negative effect. So all the senior devotees are strict and then keep telling, no, this is what you should do, then it's a lot more better, especially when you're coming up in our devotion life, especially in my life. So even we do 20% good and 80% wrong, they only glorify the 20%, and other one, that's okay, that's okay. So, where is the question of improvement?
I don't understand, sir. You want more chastisement?
People deserve that, so it should be given from senior.
Yeah, it's very beneficial to get that.
Correct.
Whenever I call someone a wrestler, they just smile. So what can you do? It's true. To get some chastisement from the senior is very beneficial for us. So we should take that as mercy when we do get it. Is that okay?
You can start from me.
Okay, I'll keep it in mind.
So Prabhu, what are the ways that we can prevent this pratishtha?
You have to serve Vaishnavas, that's all. You do service of Vaishnavas. We'll discuss that more, but that's how you do it. That's how you really come.
And the cause of, root cause of pratishtha, proper relationship is false ego, isn't it?
Yeah. You can say it like that.
Make control and enjoy.
Yeah. Be control and enjoy. Envy of Krishna. Different ways you can explain it. But the problem is that this person is puffed up because of his achievements, thinking, I am the best. He does not deserve to approach the shelter of Lord Vishnu's lotus feet, which are worshipped by all saintly persons. But he is impudent, thinking himself greatly important. So, Radha, what would you like to read?
The devotee thinks that he is very much advanced in devotional service, is considered puffed up and unfit to sit beneath the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Again, this instruction by Lord Chaitanya applicable. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Unless one is humble and meek, one cannot qualify to sit at the lotus feet of the Lord.
Are there any points here?
Yeah, I was listening to Godly Life by Raghunath Pandit, and in that he was talking about the brahmachari who was just drinking milk. The austere brahmachari whom Srivas Thakur allows to witness the Lord's dancing, he had a great desire to see. And then Lord Chaitanya does not experience any ecstasy, so it is revealed that because this person is present, and Lord Chaitanya says it's not just by being austere that something. Have love for Godhead in their hearts, so please send this. He was so furious, so So Brahmachari himself starts walking out, and when he is walking out, Maharaj was saying, you are thinking in his heart that what the Lord has said is so true, I'm so fallen, I don't deserve to be in that assembly watching the Lord's son. So he was feeling very happy to receive the Lord's chastisement, and he was considering himself fallen. He was not thinking, oh, how can the Lord know, I'm just drinking milk and all. And then the Lord knew as Paramatma in the heart, from the heart of the Brahmachari, so he called him back and allowed him to be, because he just saw that quality that this person is taking the chastisement in the right spirit.
Hmm.
You can see from that same principle over here.
Hmm. Anything else? So, we have to learn to exalt others, or bring them to a higher level than ourselves. Because our tendency is that we are coming from the material energy. So because we are coming from the material energy, we still are heavily conditioned. So because we're heavily conditioned, we still have the same tendency that is there in the material world. And in the material world, the tendency is to bring everyone else down. You see that at your workplace. There's so much competition to bring the others down, and to bring myself on top. Just like Prabhupada, he was flying to India that first time from America, and then stopped off in Japan, and then went to Dai Nippon to make some deal to get the Bhagavad Gita's printed. Prabhupada went in there with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and there's like seven guys, I think, from the Dai Nippon company on one side of the table, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Prabhupada on the other side of the table. And then Dai Nippon, you know, Prabhupada said, like, how much will you, for the books, how much will it cost? And they said, so much. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, then Prabhupada said before they went in, he said, you speak, you know, like that. So then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you know, gave some ridiculous price. You know, they said, like, you know, $16,000. Mortgage investor, something ridiculous, like some low price. And all the Japanese men, the managers from Dai Nippon, they all hopped, oh my God, you can't have. So they're having this big argument back and forth. You know, they're saying it has to be higher, and Mortgage investor saying, no, it has to be lower, like that. So Prabhupada just sat there for about 5 minutes, and then after that he said, I've heard what both of you are saying, right, and I think it should be this price. And then they said, they were just relieved because Tamal Krishna Maharaj was given such a, and then they made that point. So when they all came into the room, then they all walked in. You know, the top guy walked in, he put his card, gave his card to Prabhupada, then the second guy walked in and gave his card, and then the third guy walked in, gave his card, and like seven guys walked in, they all gave their card to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had them all on the table in front of him. And then after they'd finally finished the deal, then the top guys, they got up and they, you know, said thank you to Prabhupada, and they left. And they left the seventh guy, like the junior guy, to deal with the final signing of the contract and all those things. So then Prabhupada was preaching to him, because Prabhupada would preach to anyone. Like, he was more interested in making someone Krishna conscious. Even though they'd gone there to sign a contract, but Prabhupada was actually interested in preaching to him. So he was preaching to him. And then Prabhupada said, what is the goal of your life? Right? And there was the seven cards on the table. You know, like, you know, first, second, third, fourth in the company. He was number seven. So Prabhupada said, what is the goal of your life? So he took the card and he moved it and he put it to the top. that's the goal of his life, to become the top of the company. So basically that's material consciousness. We want to be the top. That is what the material world is about. I want to be at the top. So even when we become devotees, that is still our consciousness to a large degree. We want to be exalted. We want to be recognized and superior to the others. We want to have that position, grossly or even subtly. In our mind, we want to have that position. Or grossly, we try to get that position. Just like in the old days of ISKCON, I remember Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I was listening to one lecture, he was saying, in the old days of ISKCON, like in the 70s and the 80s, everyone would argue about who would be the temple president. You know, just like if you read in the Great Transcendental Adventure, Kaumara Prabhu's book, then the first time they went to start a temple in Perth, they drove from Adelaide to Perth. Harry Sori Prabhu and Kaumara Prabhu. Gaurang Prabhu was just at the farm on the weekend. He was teaching the cooking retreat. Very special devotee, Gaurang Prabhu and Harisori were very special. So they spent the whole time, 3 days, driving from Adelaide to Perth, arguing about who would be the temple president. The two of them argued the whole way across. Who was going to be the temple president? So back in the old days of ISKCON, Tamal Krishnamurti was saying that's what it was like in the 70s and the 80s. And then he said now in the 90s and the noughties and beyond, he said now you can't get people to be temple president. Back in the old days, everyone used to argue. And these days, no one wants to do it. Because now everyone realizes so much responsibility to take a position. But previously, everyone wanted to do that. So in the material world, that is the position. We want to put ourselves above everyone. But the nature of a devotee is something different. The nature of the devotee is he wants to push others towards Krishna. Just like there was that devotee who drew and painted the picture and showed it to Prabhupada in Vrindavan of the gopis pushing Radharani towards Krishna. And Prabhupada said, this is the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, everyone is pushing Radharani towards Krishna. Everyone is pushing the others towards Krishna. But in the material world, we want to be the ones who are in the front. We like to go around and tell everyone what to do. That's our position in the material world. Like that. But actually in the spiritual world, everyone wants to push the others forward. And we have to learn that. But that's difficult because we're conditioned souls. It takes time for us to overcome our conditioning. So, any points? It doesn't mention that it doesn't say offered obeisances. Yeah. Any other points? Oh, impudent one, my dear son, now take birth in a low, sinful family of demons, so that you will not commit such an offense again toward exalted, saintly persons in this world. Just the first paragraph.
One should be very careful not to commit offenses at the lotus feet of Vaishnavas, of whom Lord Shiva is blessed. While instructing Srila Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava as Hatimata, a mad elephant. When mad elephant enters the nice garden, it spoils the entire garden. Similarly, if one becomes like a mad elephant and commits offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, his entire spiritual career is halted. One should therefore be very careful not to commit offenses at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava.
Any points? So, what does she call Chitraketu?
My dear son.
My dear son. Like that. So, why is she saying like that?
She's trying to show her affection.
Yeah, because she's the mother. Because she's the mother of the entire creation. So, the mother, when the mother chastises the son, she says it affectionately. You know, my dear son. My dear, you're my son. Why are you doing that? Why are you doing like this? So she's chastising him like that. And actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that when she begins to curse him, then she becomes a little like, oh, he's a pure devotee, and I'm cursing him. So then she says, my dear son, like that, because she's trying to say, I'm doing this only for your benefit. So this is the nature of a devotee. And we'll see in this pastime, this is the nature of the devotee. This is how it all began in the beginning of the pastime. When Angira and Narada, they gave some benediction. That's the nature of the devotee. When a devotee does something, it's to help us. If the devotees in the band's devotee, even if they do something apparently negative, like they chastise us, it's only to help us. That's the point. The devotees only want us to help us to come to Krishna. So whether they treat us roughly by their embrace or trample us or whether they speak sweetly to us, it's their prerogative. But the devotee only wants to help us to come to Krishna. Not Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very heavy. like that. But he was also very sweet, like that. He was both. Sometimes he was sweet, sometimes he was heavy. That's up to Prabhupada. It's up to the devotee, the advanced devotee, how they want to act and behave. But they're only trying to help us to come to Krishna. That's the point. So, Mahaprabhu has already described in his teachings to Rupa Goswami that offending devotees is called the Hati Mata offense, mad elephant offense. It is most serious out of all offenses to criticize the devotees. There are six ways that you can offend devotees. What are the six ways?
Not being
sure.
Yeah, not smiling, not showing proper respect, to feel envious, to kill the devotee, like
not feeling joy,
not feeling joy or happiness when you see the devotee. Yeah, six ways that we can. That was on your exams, right? How did you do in your exams?
Good.
You did good. How do you know? You haven't got it back yet.
No, but still, they look confident because this was practically this six and you practice or not.
You're confident, are you? You haven't got it back yet. Okay. So, there's different ways that we can offend the devotees like that. So it's called Hati Mata offense. And it's actually a important point. The most subtle of them, not even to be happy when you see a devotee, right? That will cause some ill feeling in the heart of the devotee. So even those things we have to be careful of. Even though it's just a very small thing, but it affects our devotional service. It impedes us from making advancement in Krishna consciousness. So it's only a small thing, but we have to learn to be happy when we see the devotees.
And just we discussed about how Father Parvati is addressing Chitraketu as her son. Even when she curses Chitraketu, and he very happily comes down and he says, okay, mother, he says mother to her. So that way they are related to each other.
Yeah.
He's saying son, and he says, okay, mother, I accept your curse, like that.
Yeah, perfect mood. So, in the second paragraph, then Prabhupada explains about Lord Shiva's position. We must understand Lord Shiva's position. Because many people in India, they don't understand his position. They either think he's more than what he is or less than what he is. But only the devotees, only the Vaishnavas, they understand his position properly. So how do we see Lord Shiva? Topmost Vaishnava, how else do we see him?
He's the father of the whole creation.
The father of the creation? How else do we say it?
Compassionate person.
Most compassionate. Ashutosh. Ashutosh, yeah, we say him like that. But how else do we say it?
He's a spiritual master of the world.
Oh.
He's the spiritual master of the world.
Of the world, yeah.
Control of
Control of false ego, very good, yeah. He's the Kshetrapal. He's the one who guards the holy dung, so the unqualified people cannot enter into the holy dung. He is the greatest devotee. So we see him as the perfect servant of Krishna. So only the Vaishnavas understand him properly. Because he is a Vaishnava. Vaishnavanam yatashambhu. So he is a Vaishnava. So we see him properly. The others don't. In India they don't see him properly. They either think he's God. They think he's higher than what he is. Or they think he is lower than what he is. They think he's contaminated in so many things. So they have a defective understanding of Shiva's position. But only the devotees understand Shiva's position properly. And Rupa Goswami says that if you have some derogatory or... what's another word like derogatory? Like offensive attitude towards demigods, it's an offense. Yeah, if we belittle the demigods, that's an offense. To bring them down to a lower position. The demigods are very exalted persons, so we should not ridicule them. Should not offend them. Especially Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is Mahadev. He's the greatest of all the demigods. more exalted than any of them. Like that. So then, the Prabhupada is instructing us that we must give up criticism of devotees. Do not criticize devotees. Like that. Learn not to criticize the devotees. The only person who can criticize a devotee is a more advanced devotee, a more senior devotee. It is actually the duty of the advanced devotee, the senior devotee, to criticize. It says that the guru does not criticize the disciple, or the father does not criticize the children. They do not develop good character. Yeah. So the guru must chastise. That is his service. And that's not a very easy service to do. I remember my spiritual master saying, it's not easy to be a guru, because you have to constantly criticize. Constantly point out the faults. No devotee likes pointing out the faults, but the senior devotee has to continuously point out the faults. Otherwise, how will you improve? How will you ever come on time for the Bhakti Bhai Bhav class? How will you become a brahmana if you come half an hour late to do the arti? So this is all training. These things. We have to learn to develop good qualities. So when a senior devotee gives us some criticism, why is he doing that? Because he wants us to improve. Because we have to improve. Because we have so many defects. And you will not improve by yourself, because most of us do not have such a strong desire to become Krishna conscious. So the only way that we actually make advancement is when we get some impetus from the other devotees. Right? If we just leave it up to ourselves, our advancement will be very slow. But when someone puts a bomb under us, right, then we start moving. I know for myself, that's my tendency. I don't make serious advancement. But then when someone comes along and really gives me some force, some kriya, bhajana kriya means force, then when we get some force, then we actually start to move. So the senior devotees, they give us some source, yeah, some push, in order to make us advance in Krishna consciousness. That's how we advance in Krishna consciousness. And that's how the whole movement
took off.
That's how the whole movement took off, because Prabhupada was continuously pushing. He was very heavy on them. Very heavy on the early devotees. You know, if any of us got the kind of chastisements that Prabhupada gave the early devotees, it'd be very difficult for us to survive. Just give the devotees a little bit of chastisement, they can't take it. You just give them a little bit of criticism, they find that so difficult to take. The way Prabhupada was with the early devotees, he was so heavy on them. You know? Just like that one time, you know, Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and, you know, he was in the hut. You know, the hut in the front of Mayapur. So Prabhupada's in the hut. You know, so 1:30 in the morning, Prabhupada's doing his translation, and it's very hot, so the devotees are sleeping in different places. Small Krishmara is just sleeping outside on the ground, you know, under the sky. And he woke up, you know, 1:30 in the morning, he woke up, someone was kicking him. So he woke up and he looked up and it was Prabhupada. Prabhupada's kicking him. Prabhupada said, "You are snoring." Small Krishmara said, "I'm not snoring." Prabhupada said, "You are snoring. Go and sleep somewhere else." So Tamal Krishnamurti got up, you know, in the dark, you know, like 1:30 in the morning in Mayapur, and he looked around, and he had three options. You know, the sand pile, the rock pile, or the steel. So he'd go and sleep on the steel, or on the rocks, or on the sand. So he chose the sand. And he we had to walk over, you know, away from where Prabhupada was translating. And go, Prabhupada just pushed them. He pushed them. You know, Prabhupada was very forceful with them. In the early, very forceful. You know, we could not take what Prabhupada gave to them. But that's how the movement took off. Not that. So that's what it takes. For us to advance in Krishna consciousness, we need senior devotees to push us. And Prabhupada is arranging for us to get pushed. He'll do it through different people, but he's arranging for us to get pushed. So we make some advancement. Otherwise, it's very difficult for us to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Okay. Sri Shukadeva Swami continued, "My dear King Parikshit, when Chitraketu was cursed by Parvati, he descended from his airplane, bowed before her with great humility,
and pleased her completely. Chitraketu said, "My dear mother, with my own hands folded together, I accept the curse upon me. I do not mind the curse, for happiness and distress are given by the demigods as a result of one's past deeds."
Since Chitraketu was a devotee of the Lord, he was not at all disturbed by the curse of mother father. He knew very well that one suffers or enjoys the results of one's past deeds as ordained by the Devanetra, superior authority, or the agents of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knew that he had not committed any offense at the lotus feet of Lord Shiva or Goddess Parvati. Yet he had been punished, and this means that the punishment had been ordained. Thus the king did not mind it. A devotee is naturally so humble and meek that he accepts any condition of life as a blessing from the Lord. A devotee always accepts punishment from anyone as the mercy of the Lord. If one lives in this conception of life, he sees whatever reverses occur to be due to his past mistakes, or therefore he never accuses anyone. On the contrary, he becomes increasingly attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because of his being purified by his suffering. Suffering therefore is also a process of purification.
Thank you, Kama.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this connection that one who has developed Krishna consciousness and who exists in love of Krishna is no longer subject to suffering and happiness under the laws of karma. Indeed, he is beyond karma. The Brahma Samhita says, "Karmani nidrani kintu cha bhakti bhajam." A devotee is free from the reactions of his karma because he has taken to devotional service. This same principle is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:26. One who is engaged in devotional service has already been freed from the reactions of his material karma, and thus it immediately becomes Brahma Bhuta, Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30.20, or transcendental. This is also expressed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, 2nd chapter, 21st verse. Before attaining the stages of love, one becomes free from all conditions of karma. Keep going. The Lord is very kind and affectionate towards his devotee, and therefore a devotee in any condition is not subjected to the results of karma. A devotee never aspires for the heavenly planet. The heavenly planet's liberation and hell are non-different for a devotee, for he does not discriminate between different positions in the material world. A devotee is always eager to return home back to Godhead and remain there as the Lord's associate. This ambition becomes increasingly fervent in his heart, and therefore he does not care about the material changes in his life. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that Maharaj Chitraketu's being cursed by Parvati should be considered the mercy of the Lord. The Lord wanted Chitraketu to return to Godhead as soon as possible, and therefore he terminated all the reactions of his past deeds. Acting through the heart of Parvati, the Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart, cursed Chitraketu in order to end all his material reactions. Thus, Chitraketu became Vritrasura in his next life and returned home back to Godhead.
So we have to understand from this that, as Prabhupada points out in the Nectar Devotion, this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Verse Number 8, it is one of the most important verses in our Sampradaya, because it describes that when Krishna is putting through a devotee through suffering, he is doing that to bring the devotee closer to him. It is his mercy. So we have to understand that whatever is going on in our life right now is Krishna's mercy and Krishna's arrangement to bring us closer to him. So sometimes we think, why is Krishna making it so difficult? But in due course of time, we will understand. Krishna is bringing us closer to him.
And you can't get to Krishna unless you go through suffering. Because otherwise you won't become detached. And you won't develop all the necessary qualities to surrender to Krishna. So we have to become very deep and very introverted. One of the qualities of the devotee is Gambhira. 26 qualities. Gambhira means?
Grave.
Yeah, or deep. Devotee is extremely deep, extremely grave. So we have to become Gambhira. When we're going through all these difficulties, we have to become very introspective. We see, why is Krishna doing this to me? And understand that Krishna is doing this for our benefit, so that we will come closer to Him. If you want to go back to Goloka Vrindavan, then you have to go through the intense purification. Burujan Prabhu said that to me one time. He said that because we're aiming for the highest thing, which is Goloka Vrindavan, the purification is the most intense. The devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may get more intense purification than even than other Vaishnavas from other traditions. They may not get as much intense purification as us. Because what we're aiming for is the highest thing. So you have to go through the most intense purification to attain that thing. Krishna is testing, will you stick under all circumstances? Are you willing to stay under all circumstances? Good and bad. So, any points?
But one can argue that why everybody is not getting their chastisement? We all are going to.
Everyone gets it, but they just get it at different times. That's all. And you get it according to your sincerity. If you're very sincere, very serious, then Krishna will give you the chastisement. But if you're not so sincere, then Krishna won't give you such heavy chastisement.
Everyone thinks that their own problems are the biggest problems.
Yeah, it's true. We all think our problems are the biggest. And when you tell me your problems, I think, well, that's not very big. But for you, it's very big. But when you tell it for me, I think, that's not very big. And for me, my problems are the biggest. I think, oh, it's so big. And if I tell them to you, you think, well, it's not so big. The nature of the material world, we all think our problems are the big problems, but actually they're all very insignificant. Actually, in Lord Brahma's estimation, it's not such a big deal. For us, it's such a big deal, but in the universal scheme of things, it's not such a big deal. Any other points?
This month, is recommended to study this 10th chapter, 14th chapter, Brahma's prayer.
And also 15th
chapter of Gita. So I can recommend it. It's very nice.
Any other points?
Maharaj, you know, the whole class glorified these two verses. Especially what he said was, when Mother Parvati occurs Chitraketu, the reaction of Chitraketu, he said, this is the consciousness of a person who is going back to Godhead. If you want to go back to Godhead, you must have to understand it. He said, generally when such a curse happens to a devotee, I mean, to an ordinary person, either he might get angry or he will be completely disappointed because he has to become a demon. But the way Chitraketu reacted is something different. What Maharaj said was, he was neither angry nor disappointed, but he was grateful. This is the quality of a devotee. And after this rite, when she, you know, Maharaj said, this is the test for Chitraketu. This is the test for Chitraketu. And Lord Shiva laughs at, you know, the way how he comes and offers obeisances, and he says, it's not intentional I did this, you know, he will say so many reasons. And Maharaj said, Lord Shiva would laugh at Mother Parvati, you know, how great is a Vaishnava, you know, even though he has to become a demon, he is being grateful, he is not repentant or, you know, disappointed. This is the quality of a person who is going back to God. I heard the same point at least 50 times. Back. Beautiful point.
So I'll give out the topics, open book topics. Oh, so that's fine. You give to the girls. Okay. So if there's any more open book exams or oral presentations from the last section, tonight is the last night to give them to me. This is the next section, which is Chichipetra's section, the final section. K and B's I'll give you next week. Today was extremely busy, so I'm sorry, I just didn't have time to analyze the K and B's. And anyone who's coming to Burujan for Guru's retreat, if you're coming for one day or if you're coming for the whole retreat, you need to let me know by Friday what's going on at the latest, so that I can organize things. So if you know how long you're coming for, when you're coming, come and see me straight away after class. Otherwise, by Friday at the latest. If I don't hear by Friday, then you have to drive to the phone and speak to me personally. Or else you can ring me. Shall we call back?
Yes.